Hey, Anna, I know you're very excited about February and especially February 14th every year. But don't you think that the astronomy is a very romantic subject?
Of all the subjects.
Of all the scientific subjects.
Oh, scientific subjects.
You know, chemistry, biology.
Yeah, sure.
There's just a romance about the stars.
That's true.
So, and I think you've probably seen it at the observatory, especially. Like, people get really kind of like excited.
Our Valentine's event sells out by like the end of December every year because people know.
It's amazing.
It's the place for romance.
So, what is it? What is it about the place? It's like we have so many engagements and proposals and weddings.
Yeah.
And what is it about the place? What do you think it is?
That it's old.
Okay.
And historic.
There we go.
That took forever. Historic.
That's all right.
Sorry.
Boy, that was the least romantic answer. See, I was thinking you're gonna.
What
like,
do you
really
think
go,
then?
Oh, the majesty of the universe, the vastness of space, the stars twinkling.
How is that romantic?
Well, you're there at night. It's like, you know, you're kind of.
This is
like,
from the person who lets people make out in one of the small domes.
Well, that was one time. It was one time I let that happen, and actually,
you're like, whoops,
whoops.
Fine.
I gave him 2 minutes in the dome, and I said, you don't use the telescope. That's
right,
all I say.
Don't touch the telescope.
But there's something magical about the place. I don't
know. That's true.
You're there at night and it's like, you know, you're kind of like, and you do.
And nighttime is more romantic.
I think that helps too.
That's true. And it's cold, so you're like snuggling. I mean, maybe.
Yeah. That's what I think. I think it's one of those places that, yeah, I think we're going to have so many, you know, just last week we had an engagement where they went up to the dome and they told me ahead of time, the guy told me ahead of time he was going to do it. And so I was like, well, go to the end of the tour and like just hang out at the back.
Oh, you were like Cupid helping them put it together.
I helped it happen. And, and so the rest of the group filed down and then they stayed behind and she was just like, it was cold up in the dome, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I want to go downstairs in the warmth." And he's,
and then
all of a sudden, he like got down on one knee and proposed, and she said yes. And then they came down from the dome, and everybody clapped and cheered. It was like,
so I'm about to cry. That's adorable.
Isn't that amazing?
And you helped it happen. And you're not even a romantic person.
No, not at all. So this was.
You're like, I hate romance.
I know. I think I just did it for the tips.
Yeah. You're like, can I get a little something extra on the side here for like doing this for you? Maybe. No,
even as hard-hearted and scientifically logical coldness that I am, I even it gets to me sometimes.
Yeah, and then they're gonna get maybe they'll get married at the observatory.
Maybe, I mean,
there's a lot of people have.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So romantic.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I'm asking him the hard questions. On this episode, Monica Young, news editor for Sky and Telescope magazine, joins us for a look at the skies in 2020. So basically, you help bring two people together.
That's my main job, is star-crossed lovers, bringing them together at the observatory.
That's right. That's when it comes down to it, what you're really doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's a side part of the job, at least.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, romance at the Observatory. I mean, it's not that weird. A lot of our former directors married. They were called I hate this, but they were called computers. The women that would, like,
do the computing.
Do the computations for them. Yes,
the
backbone of the operation.
We had a number of, astronomers that, you know, there's these bachelors that are working at the observatory late nights, and then they're having the computers computing their things and
late into the night.
Late in the night.
It's romance. What am I trying to say here?
It happens.
I
guess so. I don't know. But they're all kind of in the past.
That's true.
It's
because women aren't just computers anymore.
Well, I know. Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly.
That's true.
But, there's something about it. And I think there's a lot of great mythology behind this, too, that, the ancients were looking up the stars and they were, like, getting moved by the stuff. And
a lot of tragedies, though.
Well, there's a lot of tragedies.
As you pointed out.
That's true.
It's not a lot of happy endings.
They tried to... And what I think is just fascinating is that they're looking at the dots, basically, in the sky. And
just making stuff up.
Making stuff up, connecting the dots, making lines, making pictures, and then making stories. And it's like, you look up at Orion and you see Orion's belt and you're like, Yeah, that's a hunter. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's his head, one star.
But then it goes even farther than that. It's like there's a whole story with Orion up there as the hunter, and he's being trampled by a bull with seven women on its back, and another hunting dog and another hunting dog are chasing after a unicorn and a bunny rabbit down by the river. It's like all in the stars.
A bunny rabbit?
Yeah, there's a rabbit constellation, too. Under Orion's feet.
You know how I feel about constellations.
I know.
They're not anything.
But, you know, and then there is the romance story of Orion and the seven sisters,
mm-hmm.
and that you know, here he was, this big tough macho guy, and right. This one beautiful spring day he falls in love, and who he falls in love with was seven women at the same time.
This is disgusting.
That turn out to be sisters.
This is toxic masculinity run amok.
This is like, you know, I mean, you think like soap operas today or something. I mean,
seven at the same time. Was
yeah.
he like, I can't.
No,
Orion,
he's like,
get it together.
Yeah, he like goes up and talks to him, like asks them all to marry him.
And they're sisters?
And they're sisters too.
Hey,
I don't know if you knew that ahead of time, but either way.
That's fair.
But this is pretty tame stuff for ancient Greece. But he's like,
you're
yeah.
like, calm down.
He's like, yeah, I think the eight of us will be very happy in my big cabin in the woods. What do you think? And they turn him down flatly.
You don't say. Some sense. Yes.
But he keeps bothering them over and over again. So the sisters have to ask the gods for help to protect them. And so the gods turn the sisters into doves so they could fly away from this annoying
man. How about we turn Orion into anything, really?
Well, I guess. But,
you know, it's always the women being turned into stuff. Do you ever notice that?
Yeah, yeah. But look, then they go up to the sky and they float up to the sky and then they turn into the beautiful Seven Sisters star cluster up
there.
They
were just trying to live their lives.
That's true.
And you got this bro coming in, probably wearing, you know, leather or pelts or something. And he's all trying to like Mac on them,
yeah.
and they're just like, you know what? Can you flex away from us? We're trying to live our lives and not be turned into doves or stars.
Yeah, I think.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I think it's pretty much how it was written in the ancient
Greek. Feminist.
I don't know what flex is in ancient Greek, but I think that's. I think you got it.
The lingo. We need to have like a lingo moment.
Yeah,
flex is a thing.
Yeah, and I mean, then we look at there's another constellation up at this time of year, Gemini twins. This one again, not that great of a romantic one. So again, I like it because it's. I always like the ones that don't work out too.
Right. Yeah. Because you're like, right.
So the Gemini twins, you got these two guys. One of them is a mortal.
Okay.
And the other is a god. So he Jack cannot butt. Be killed.
Yeah.
So the two of them are invited to their cousin's wedding. And I mean, cousins, plural. They have two twin cousins, males, that are getting married.
Seems you're running the family.
And the two males, twins, are getting married to two female twins. So we got three sets of twins here.
Okay.
So the Gemini twins are hanging outside the wedding, and they go into the wrong tent. They're like, oh, whoops, I thought this was the food tent. And it was really where the brides were getting ready to get married.
Okay.
And eight eyes met, and they all fell in love. And so the Gemini twins are going to try to escape with the two brides.
That they just met.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't take long. And so they start to leave the wedding when the two cousins, the grooms, come and confront them. Big
They're like,
fight.
Hey, guys, we were just trying to drop your gift off. Where is the gifts table? We're just looking.
Yeah.
Which side do we sit on?
Right. But no, the grooms didn't have anything of it. And so then they got in this big fight. The four of them are battling. And I don't know why you pick a fight with a guy that can't be killed. That seems
dumb.
But the one Gemini twin gets killed. The other two grooms are killed. And so then the last Gemini twin is so saddened that he lost his brother and that he didn't want to live life without his brother. And so the gods put the two of them up in the sky as the two Gemini twin stars, Pollux and Castor. And so it's the sign of brotherly love.
Why don't you just make a Match.com profile, get on Bumble. I've had a lot of friends have some success. You don't need to be stealing brides on their wedding day.
Nah.
I have no sympathy.
Yeah, I mean, Orion's profile page, I wear a lot of pelts. That's what he says.
That's right. I'm really into leather skirting.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
If you know what I'm talking about, like with those gladiator sandals, which are very popular, actually.
Yep.
Well, I'm just
now,
saying.
This is a stretch from the romance topic that we've had. But going back to Orion, you've heard about Betelgeuse, right?
Of course.
The great giant red star.
So giant.
You know, we're talking red, you know, red and Valentine's goes together.
Hand in hand.
So yeah, this is the big star in Orion. It kind of marks his shoulder, or like more anatomically correct, he has his arm raised up. So it's his.
I mean, it's not anything.
It's his armpit. Right? Yeah. That's his armpit. That's where it is. And so
perfect.
So Beetlejuice has gone through some changes, dramatic changes recently. It is about.
You're very concerned.
Oh my gosh! Like, I mean, I've watched the sky for 20 years, and I've never. You don't see stars change their brightness. But Beetlejuice is literally half as bright as it was.
Maybe it's having a bad day. Have you thought about that? Maybe it needs a little Zoloft, little pick me up. Maybe it's just having a.
I can't deal with this with stars. Stars are the constant in my life.
They're supposed to twinkle. Stars twinkle,
but they never change like
this.
Isn't
that what twinkling is? Like bright and light and bright and light. It's always on.
Yeah, but this is always dim. And so or the whole outline of Orion is different now. If you look at it, his armpit is not bright anymore.
And bummer.
So astronomers are really perplexed. They're trying to figure out what's going on.
What do you think's happening?
Well, we've been watching Beetlejuice for a long time, and it is a candidate to explode someday soon and go supernova. And so the word on the street is maybe this is the sign of the end, that it's contracting, it's shrinking, ready for its big final explosion.
Someone did say that on our Facebook profile.
Yes.
Our Facebook page. Is Beetlejuice going to go supernova?
Yes.
And I was like, shrug emoji?
Shrug emoji is the right answer, actually. Because when we say like Beetlejuice is going to explode soon, to astronomers, soon means within 10,000 years.
Okay, so I'll take that bet.
That's our soon. You want to take that bet?
10,000 years, I'm in. Yeah. What's the stakes? Let's do this.
But it could be tomorrow, too. And so something's happening.
But why is it getting dimmer if it's going to explode?
Well, it's probably a size thing, because Beetlejuice is the size of the orbit of Jupiter. So like if Beetlejuice was our sun, we would be inside of it. It'd be about
roasting
5,000 degrees right now.
Right, sure.
It does fluctuate in size quite a bit.
Okay.
And so now it's kind of, it's just shrinking, but we've never seen it do this before, this dramatically. So what is happening? We got to stay tuned. But watch the skies. I've been trying to egg it on. I've been trying to like say, come on, blow up. Come on. Right now. Go. You do it.
What is wrong with you?
I want to see this.
What if it's, I think it's having a bad day, a bad, hard moment.
Right.
Hard times. We need to make it a vision board, get it back on track. We get it a little, pick me up, get it a little playlist, and it'll perk right back up.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fine.
All right. So I shouldn't be taunting it.
Stop goading it to blow up.
Well, maybe I'll do the reverse psychology.
What is wrong with you?
You're great. You're a strong star. You'll last forever.
And then watch it just like.
I know. I mean, we're due. I want to see this thing. I don't want to wait 10,000 years.
That's selfish. That's not romantic.
Yeah. outside of this bringing people together, which I also
want to blow apart some stars.
Yeah, I also want to blow things apart too. I like both.
It's called balance.
Yeah, that's what the universe is. Now that we're safely settled into the new year, we need to get ready for what's to come in outer space. We're really excited to welcome Monica Young, the news editor for Sky and Telescope magazine, and their website to talk about what's happening in 2020. Thanks for joining us, Monica.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you've been writing and working for Sky and Telescope for a number of years now. What is it like around the office? Like, what's it like in the Sky and Tel office? I picture lots of space age furniture and, everybody's like, on cloud nine, they're all talking about stuff up in space. Like, what's it like there?
Cloud nine, literally.
I don't know about the space age furniture, but we definitely have our heads in space. We're just, it's very busy around here, and we're just always talking about what's new up in the sky and what's new in science. And so it's a really fun place to work.
A lot of creative folks in one area.
Yeah, well, we have creative folks in lots of areas. We kind of have our observing and our science divisions, but we talk a lot amongst each other. So, and then we've got, of course, our illustrator and designer, and they're probably the most creative of all of us. So, doing all the artwork for us. But
yeah, I wouldn't think necessarily creative, but just very. Intelligent, interesting people, like learning and sharing all kinds of cool information.
We have conversations, and we have a bet sheet up in the hallway, actually, about bets about various things that are happening in the universe. So.
A bet sheet?
Oh my gosh.
What's on the sheet now?
Well, there's one that I won about dark matter. A previous editor-in-chief still owes me $5.
Really?
Let's see. Another one about the James Webb Space Telescope, which has been much delayed. I'm on the optimistic end. I'm saying it is going to launch. So I'm hoping to still win that one.
Yeah, that would be great.
Oh, so you didn't put a date. You just said it will launch. Yeah, I'd get on that action. That's good.
The date is December 31, 2021. I'm saying it's going to launch before that.
Okay, I wouldn't take that one.
Launch after that. So it's scheduled for March 2021, so I could still win.
Oh, yeah, you could definitely win. I like there's a whole bit. What's another one? This is exciting. I want to know what else you guys are wondering about. I'm a little nervous, too.
Well, you know, there was one that was about, you know, NASA puts out these press releases sometimes and they don't say what it's going to be about. So we've definitely had some speculation about what is NASA announcing. And it always is much less exciting than where our heads go to.
I know. Everybody always thinks it's aliens, but it never is.
Right. Not one time. Well, tell us a little bit about how you kind of made your way to Sky and Telescope and your background.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I studied astronomy. So I did my PhD at Boston University. I did some research over at the Center for Astrophysics at Harvard. And so I was all in for astronomy, doing research in astronomy. And I did a postdoc once I graduated at Penn State. And I spent a year there, but while I was doing my research there, I was also working with the media relations department and writing pieces for them. I had been interested in science writing for a while. And that kind of helped me make my transition. So once I got back to Boston, I actually ended up leaving the postdoc after a year and just tried my luck. And then I actually wasn't even aware that Sky and Telescope was in Boston. So I really got lucky to get this position. So they actually started me on a two, they told me I was starting as an intern and I was very happy to get that. And then after 2 weeks, I got the job. So
2 weeks.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You have a PhD in astronomy and they're like, you've worked at Harvard. They're like, why don't you start as an intern? Wow. Man, yeah. But 2 weeks, that's not that bad.
That's the fastest internship. That's
pretty good.
She's
so impressive.
The trial for the actual job. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and so I've read a lot of the stories you had about 2019, and then we want to talk about what's coming up in 2020. Do you have a favorite story that you had from last year, and what's coming up this year that we should look forward to?
Well, you know, my favorite, I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the solar system, so I can get back to that if you want to talk more about that. I am really excited about gravitational waves. And I just think it's a really neat, it's, you know, astronomers are always looking up at the sky and looking at the light that's coming down or the radio waves or the X-rays. And so to see the universe in a whole different window through gravitational waves is super exciting. And we had those first couple detections and it was like, okay, there's one source here and there's one source there. And now, over the past year, there's been more than 40. I actually have the app that alerts me every time there's a gravitational wave event, which is really fun. It has a little alert chime that goes whoop.
How often is that a thing?
It actually happens quite a lot.
Really?
And over the past year, so they're not done yet with this observing run, but so far there have been more than 40 unretracted alerts. So some alerts end up getting retracted after the fact. They think it's an event, but then they do some additional processing and it kind of goes away. So there's been more than 40 events where they haven't been retracted, so there's something to them. And what I'm really looking forward to is they're actually going to be releasing the catalog on the first 6 months of this observing run in late April, I believe, or maybe early May. And so that's what I'm looking forward to the most, is just finding out, you know, what other sources have we seen? What can we learn about black holes? And especially neutron stars are kind of the weird things. That's what I want to start getting, is that, you know, it's fun to see a pair of black holes merge or two neutron stars merge, but what are the really weird things that maybe we're not expecting to see?
And that's how it started with the gravitational waves, that they saw the two black holes merge or collide at one time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was, man, what a story. I mean, to be there to break that story, that was really cool. And so what's coming up in 2020 that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. So aside from that, the other thing that I've been hearing rumors about, so we all saw the famous image of the black hole last year from the Event Horizon Telescope.
Right.
That was a black hole in another galaxy called M87. And that's a massive galaxy with a very massive black hole at the center. So there's I've been hearing rumors that we should be getting actually some data about the black hole in our galaxy sometime this year. So I'm very excited to see that. The black hole at the center of our galaxy is actually a lot more complicated. We're not sure why, but it's not really feeding on the gas that's around it. There's a lot of stuff going on with magnetic fields and turbulence and all this fun stuff. So I think we'll be able to actually really learn something about our black hole and what it's doing and why.
Well, I can't wait. I mean, what's going on with our black hole? I mean, I'm excited.
She's so, on the edge of her seat.
My seat. Mostly, is it going to swallow us all up with it? But I've been assured that's not going to be a thing. So
it's 26,000 light years away. So
you're right.
That's pretty far.
I'm going to drop it down my list of concerns. But I am wondering though about we decided it's Sagittae, the arrow, and it's going to explode in 2083. Right?
Yes.
Maybe?
Plus or minus 16 years.
Plus or minus 16 years. Okay, that just bumped up my... So I like to ask Dean, we need to do a segment on this podcast, how worried should I be? Like, what's the story? Am I concerned? Am I fine?
Oh, well, we're fine. Yeah, it's going to be...
Great.
Think the prediction was that it might get as bright as Venus in the sky, so it'll definitely be cool to look at, but it's not going to be... demolishing all life on Earth.
I won't be here either. What am I talking about? Why am I worried? 2083. Well, you never know. I could live a long time. I mean, 102 years old is possible.
You could.
It's possible.
You mean, you mean 83 years old.
I would only be a mere spring of a girl. And, you know, I would be but I'd be 100 and something.
This was the first time. That, I mean, I've never seen a scientist predict, you know, an actual date of a death of a star. Is that a first for you too?
You know, so there was another one, I'm blanking on the name of it, but there have been other predictions in the past that actually haven't panned out. Through no fault of the scientists, there were some mix-ups in the archival data that they were using. But yeah, so it has been predicted before. We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, this is great. We're really looking forward to some of the stories you guys are working on here for 2020, and keep up the great work. And hopefully you win some bets.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
You have to keep us up to date, and we'll watch hopefully that the Webb telescope goes up. I would have taken the bet it'll go up someday. That's what I would have taken.
What kind of bet is that? She's going to put, she's like backing it. She's,
you
know.
Specific. Yeah. We're very specific.
I like it.
You have to have an exact date.
Oh, man. Well, we'll have to see what other bets that you guys have lost and won in the days. Monica, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to Sky and Telescope coming out here.
All right, great. Thank you for having me.
It's been so great having Monica Young from Sky and Telescope magazine with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, so we're going to ask a listener question from the old mailbag.
From the old mailbag.
And by the old mailbag, I think I mean the internet. I don't think there's
email.
There's no mailbag.
Email,
yeah, there's
question.
No mailbag. The old email bag.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here we go. Are you ready?
Ready.
So Saturn has thick rings.
Right.
Right. And Uranus has thin rings.
Right.
Why has the universe not put a ring on Earth?
Yeah.
Don't they like it? They should put a ring on it.
They should.
What's
they
the
should.
Deal?
I like it.
I live here.
Right, right.
I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question because we've got this variation in the solar system. Every planet's a little bit different. And so Saturn, of course, is known for the gigantic rings that you can see in telescopes. But all the gas giant planets have rings. So Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune all have rings.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturn is by far the biggest ring system. And every other one is pretty dinky in comparison. So what makes Saturn unique among those four? We don't really know. Now, there's some theories. So
Yikes.
One theory is that, you know, the rings of Saturn are made up of broken up moons. So moons come together, collide.
Solid, right?
They well,
you
the rings
skate on them or walk on them or run on them.
Yeah, so the moons come together, they collide, they break up into pieces, and they get scattered in these rings. So you got all this big gravel debris field. That's what the rings are.
Yeah.
Less romantic, but that's what it is.
That's true.
And so we think, yeah, Saturn must have had more collisions, more material makes more rings. But also, Saturn has these moons that are within the rings. They call them shepherd moons that actually move the ring particles around and keep them in their places. They're like, you know, like shepherding a sheep. And so they're keeping the rings where they are.
I get it. I was thinking Alan Shepard.
No, not that.
Okay, got yeah. confused.
No, no. And so they're keeping the rings in their places. Okay. So because the rings material will either want to fall into the planet or get shot out of the planet. But these other little moons keep them nicely hemmed in. And so we think that's why Saturn has bigger rings than the other planets.
Because they're like basically being herded.
Exactly. Because Jupiter doesn't have that and the other ones don't have it.
Because you can't even see the other ones, really.
You need specialized telescopes or fly by them in spacecraft. That's about the only way you can see the other rings.
Right.
So Earth doesn't have a ring currently because, well, we didn't have enough stuff colliding above the Earth to scatter into pieces.
Also, which I'm fine with, by the way.
I am very fine with
I'm
that,
I'm not
too,
really
yeah.
into...
I don't need things start making rings out
no,
there.
No, let's not scatter anything.
The rings... Earth is also not big compared to the other planets. I mean, Earth's diameter is about... it's about one-eighth the diameter of Saturn. It's so we're dinky as planets go.
Yeah.
But... there's some evidence that we used to have a ring a long, long time ago when we had something run into us. So we had a big object run into us, smack into the Earth, break off part of the Earth, and then all these pieces were out in space circling around the Earth. And from that, we could have had a ring for a small amount of time, but that ring quickly solidified into another object that we see every night, and that's the moon. So that's where our moon came from, was from
that
this gigantic...
That sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
That cannot be actually what is going on.
It seems completely ridiculous.
Cohesively came back together into a perfectly round ball that now just happens to chill right above us every night.
Yep.
Too convenient.
Too convenient.
I'm calling it out.
Oh, no. It does sound
ridiculous.
Do you
think that's what happened?
That is what all the evidence is pointing to, that the moon broke away from the Earth... And all these pieces were scattered into space, and gravity brought them together. They're all still molten out there, and so they formed into a sphere. When you leave stuff out in space long enough, it's going to form itself into a sphere if you have enough material.
So they were scattered like Waffle House hash browns.
Right.
And then they came together to make one big hash brown.
Yeah.
One big moon.
Yeah, we had a little...
And then it just stayed there.
We put a little Waffle House syrup in there. They all come together. You mold it into a ball. There you go.
You know, this is that analogy can keep going.
That sounds good.
I could really use some hash browns.
Right, sounds about right.
Waffle House could sponsor the show, too.
Oh, we're waiting.
It's an idea. That's right.
Callers are waiting. Lines are open.
Standing by. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Monica Young for joining us. You'll find a link to Sky and Telescope magazine on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
Monica Young is just the latest in a long line of great interviews we've done on Looking Up. You'll find the archive of all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you get your podcast. And if you're an Apple Podcast user, we'd really appreciate a rating and comment. That helps others find us.
Do you have a great idea for a topic or guest, or is there a guest you think we should have on the show? Let us know. We're on Facebook and Twitter, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.